The place that we had reached for our descent along the bank was alpine. What reclined upon that bank would, too, repel all eyes, just like the toppled mass of rock that struck because of the earthquake or eroded crops. The Adige on its flank, this side of Trent, were from the mountaintop from which it thrust down the plain. The rock is shattered so that it permits a path for those above. Such was the passage down to that ravine. And at the edge above the cracked abyss, there lay outstretched the infamy of Crete, conceived within the counterfeited cow. And catching sight of us, he bit himself like one whom fury devastates within. Turning to him, my sage cried out, "Perhaps you think this is the Duke of Athens here, who in the world above brought you your death. Be off, you beast. This man who comes has not been tutored by your sister. All he wants in coming here is to observe your torments." Just as the bull that breaks loose from its halter the moment it receives the fatal stroke and cannot run, but plunges back and forth, so did I see the Minotaur respond, and my alert guide cried, "Run toward the pass. It's better to descend while he's berserk." And so we made our way across that heap of stones, which often moved beneath my feet because my weight was somewhat strange for them. While climbing down, I thought, he said, "You wonder, perhaps, about that fallen mass watched over by the inhuman rage I have just quenched. Now I would have you know, the other time that I descended into lower hell, this mass of boulders had not yet collapsed. But if I reason rightly, it was just before the coming of the one who took from Dis the highest circle's splendid spoils, that on all sides the steep and filthy valley had trembled so. I thought the universe felt love, by which, as some believe, the world has often been converted into chaos. And at that moment, here as well as elsewhere, these ancient boulders toppled in this way. But fix your eyes below upon the valley, for now we near the stream of blood, where those who injure others violently boil. O blind cupidity and insane anger, which goad us on so much in our short life, then steep us in such grief eternally. I saw a broad ditch bent into an arc, so that it could embrace all of that plain, precisely as my guide had said before. Between it and the base of the embankment raced files of centaurs who were armed with arrows, as in the world above they used to hunt. On seeing us descend, they all reined in, and after they had chosen bows and shafts, three of their number moved out from their ranks, and still afar off, one cried, "What punishment do you approach as you descend the slope? But speak from there. If not, I draw my bow." My master told him, "We shall make reply only to Chiron when we reach his side. Your hasty will has never served you well." Then he nudged me and said, "That one is Nessus, who died because of lovely Dianara and of himself wrought vengeance for himself." And in the middle, gazing at his chest, is mighty Chiron, tutor of Achilles, the third is Pholus, he who was so frenzied. And many thousands wheel around the moat, their arrows aimed at any soul that thrusts above the blood more than its guilt allots. By now we had drawn near those agile beasts. Chiron drew out an arrow. With the notch, he parted his beard back upon his jaws. When he'd uncovered his enormous mouth, he said to his companions, "Have you noticed how he who walks behind moves what he touches? Dead souls are not accustomed to do that." And my good guide, now near the centaur's chest, the place where his two natures met, replied, "He is indeed alive, and so alone it falls to me to show him the dark valley. Necessity has brought him here, not pleasure. For she who gave me this new task was one who had just come from singing Hallelujah. He is no robber. I am not a thief. But by the power that permits my steps to journey on so wild a path, give us one of your band to serve as our companion. and let him show us where to ford the ditch, and let him bear this man upon his back, for he's no spirit who can fly through the air. Then Chiron wheeled about right and said to Nessus, then return and be their guide. If other troops disturb you, fend them off. Now, with our faithful escort, we advanced along the blood-red boiling ditch's banks, beside the piercing cries of those who boiled. I saw some who were sunk up to their brows, so that huge centaur said, "These are the tyrants who plunge their hands in blood and plundering. Here they lament their ruthless crimes. Here are both Alexander and the fierce Dionysus, who brought such years of grief to Sicily. That brow with hair so black is Ezzelino. That other there, the blonde one, is Obizzo d'Este, he who is indeed undone within the world above by his fierce son." Then I turned to the poet, and he said, "Now let him be your first guide, me your second." A little further on, the centaur stopped above a group that seemed to rise above the boiling blood as far as their throats. He pointed out one shade, alone, apart, and said, "Within God's bosom he impaled the heart that still drips blood upon the Thames." Then I caught sight of some who kept their heads and even their full chests above the tide, among them many whom I recognized. And so the blood grew always shallower until it only scorched the feet. And here we found a place where we could ford the ditch. "Just as you see that on this side, the brook continually thins," the centaur said, "so I should have you know the rivulet along the other side will slowly deepen its bed until it reaches once again the depth where tyranny must make lament. And there divine justice torments Attila, he who was such a scourge upon the earth, and Pyrrhus, Sextus, to eternity it milks the tears that boiling brook unlocks from Rainier of Corneto, Rainier Pazzo, those two who waged such war upon the high roads." Then he turned round and crossed the ford again.